Clap your hands and stomp your feet. You're listening to the Clap Your Hands podcast, hosted by Elliot Shure Parks and Jack Fritz.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the latest edition of the Clap Your Hands podcast, brought to you, of course, by Coors Light. Make sure you come hang out with us Friday night at Lucy's in Center City. Huge Sixers game on the way, and James joining us today. What up, James? How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. We're not going to do the we're not starting.
No, we're not going to
put DG through
clap
that. We're not gonna put DG.
No.
Yeah,
he remembers everybody.
The song. Yeah, see, DG remembers the song.
Can't forget that song.
For those that don't know, that is, of course, the voice of Danny Green, former Sixer, NBA champion. Danny, normally we start the pod by clapping our hands. We won't make you do that, but you were singing the song. You were here for a lot of victories with the Sixers. Thanks so much for joining us. Super appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited. I appreciate you guys having me on, and I'm looking forward to the playoffs to see what Philly can bring.
Well, that's where I wanted to start with. So a few weeks ago, when things weren't looking so great for the Sixers, you were one of the first people that I heard come out and say, this is a team people should believe in. This is a team that teams in the East should be worried about. And since then, you've been proven correct. I think they now have the seventh best title odds in the NBA. They've won six or seven straight games. What was it that you saw then that made you so confident? And what are you seeing now that might make you even more confident than you were before?
Joel Embiid.
Okay, there we go.
I mean, you know, he's MVP player. He's most valuable. When you take that guy off a team or add him to a team, it's a difference. It's a big impact. And the fact that he came back, he was in pretty good shape. He was slim. No, that was the first part that was like, all right, the biggest worry or concern is how's he going to come back? And obviously he's not in rhythm. He's not himself. But the biggest thing was him being in shape. And him being slimmer like and not heavy with the weight is a huge key in him finding his rhythm sooner. So, you know, that's one variable that's out the way. You know, he's in shape. He's back. He's getting healthier. And all he's do is find rhythm. And the rest of their schedule didn't seem very crazy. The East is wide open. So those other factors made it easy for me. Like, look, whoever's in the East besides Boston should be worried. You know, Milwaukee has injuries. Well, New York has injuries. Orlando is young. Indiana is young. Like, other teams are trying to figure it out. So when you're trying to face a Philly team with Joel come back and D'Anthony Melton, that's a tough battle in a seven-game series with Tyrese and Joel. That's one that I said I would not be comfortable winning if I'm not the Boston Celtics. So Cleveland, I said, they're still having injuries figured out. All these other groups are young. The East is so wide open that anybody could come out. And even Boston, people aren't fully believed in Boston just yet because something about them is not giving people the for sure, like, you know, instead of missing the it factor, whatever it is. But this is their year, I believe. So if they stay healthy, they have a lot of pressure on them. So if they don't get it done, there's going to be some changes made.
You mentioned something in there really quick about Joel coming back in, I don't want to say the best shape of his life because that term gets thrown around, but man, I was so surprised at how good he looked physically when he came back. You've been here with Joel when he's tried to come back from injuries, probably came back earlier than he wanted to in the past because of the playoffs and the schedule and all that. But as an athlete that played with Joel, but also as someone that has had to go through rehab, how hard is it in season when you're rehabbing to come back and look as good as he has from a physical standpoint?
Oh, man. Rehab isn't for everybody. But sometimes it can go two different ways. It can go one of two ways. Like, usually when you have a surgery, you can gain a lot of weight or you can lose a lot of weight, and it's hard to gain it back. Luckily for him, I don't know what it was, but he looks like he had lost the weight, which is better. Because if you gain the weight, it's harder to rehab and lose the weight while you're doing that because you're not able to run as much as you would like to. So rehab and in-season, off-season, whatever it is, it's still not easy for anybody. So I give a lot of guys credit that have gone through it more than once, like the Klay Thompsons of the world who had multiple surgeries, back-to-back years, the DeMarcus Cousins. Those guys have been through the ringer, man. And I said it's not easy, especially in-season. So, you know, big kudos to Joel for keeping himself healthy and in shape while doing so and getting back in a good, decent fashion. Obviously, he didn't rush it this time, but for him to be in shape while doing that, I said that's the hardest part to do.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to go back to you talking about how the East is wide open, because I know that's music to ESP's ears. He's been saying that for a little bit. Officially, he's officially done being scared of the Bucks is what he said last podcast. But I want to go back to that where you said, like, the Sixers are eyeing that sixth seed right now. Your confidence, is that contingent on the Sixers getting that sixth seed? Or if they're in a playing scenario, does your confidence kind of go down with the extra mileage that they might have to put on Joel's body or Maxie's body or stuff like that.
No, my confidence in them stays the same. There's no doubt they'll be in the playoffs, whether they're the 6th seed or 7th or 8th seed. I think they'll be 7 or 8 either way. I think they'll find a way to try to avoid Boston, even if they do play Boston. I see that being a 6-7 game series. You know, that's one of the games, and they could be the team that shocks, you know, Boston, because a wounded animal is very dangerous. You just don't know how to attack them. You don't know how to game plan for them. You don't know who's healthy, who's not. So, that's just a tough matchup. But if they can get 6 or 7, they're in a really good spot. 8, obviously, is tough, but I could see them getting the 6 or 7 spot, whether it's before the play-in or during the play-in. My confidence with them winning a game or two in the play-in, so it's very, very high. I think they'll be okay regardless. So it doesn't change. Obviously, more on him. I think it just gets him more in shape and more in rhythm. So the more games he plays, the better for them.
You know Joel game. You know his game well, obviously playing with him. The times you got to watch him so far this season, you mentioned he's still kind of getting in rhythm, which speaks highly of him, because he had 37 points a few days ago. So it's, you know, he's already playing pretty well. But when you watch him, how close do you think he looks to whatever you want to consider the full version of himself is now that he's had, I think, 3 or 4 games since he's been back?
He's close. He's not far off. I think he's probably like 80%, 85%. I think he's still missing another 10 to 15%, maybe 20. I mean, he scores a lot of baskets. He knows how to get baskets. We know that. You know, the 37 points does not tell me where he's like where he needs to be, depending on who he's playing and how he does it. He does know how to get to the free throw line. When I see him in his rhythm and he's not searching for fouls and just getting back to his pull-up mid-range game and confident in the post and playing with his teammates, also that's another factor, getting used to playing with guys he hadn't played with before because there's new guys there now. When I see him in his rhythm and making sure he's in his spots and guys are playing around him and, you know, vice versa, also getting them to where they need to be, that's when I'm like, all right, he's where he needs to be. And I think with each game, he'll get closer and closer. But right now I see him, that big knee brace, and it has movements, and how he's trying to get to the free throw line more than often shows me he's still not 100% confident in where he needs to be. And that's probably missing another, you know, 15% or so.
Yeah, that rhythm that Embiid needs to get back in, that's not just for him, right, DG? Because we see him get back.
Oh, that's for everybody. Yeah, that's for everybody.
Get better. Our guy Kelly Oubre, ESP up there.
Yeah.
Starting to look better and better. So this, him getting in rhythm is kind of a domino effect, trickle-down effect to everyone else, right?
100%. You know, they also, like said, Campaign, Kyle Lowry, Buddy Hield, they never played with him. This is their first time playing him, so they're learning how to play with him. And the guys that were playing so many games without him, played 30 games without him. Obviously, Tyrese plays with him fine. Tobias has played with him before. But to just adapt and adjust him back to the roles that they had previous to when he was out. You know what I'm saying? When he was out, they had different roles. So Kelly figuring it out, Batum. There's so many other factors. De'Anthony Melton been out for so long, him trying to find his rhythm as well. There's a lot of factors that come into play when it comes to adding such a valuable piece to your, just, you know, that big puzzle piece to your, you know, your big picture. Everybody's got to figure out, it's a domino effect. They all have to get in rhythm with playing with him. They got to get used to, you know, finding where he likes the ball, how he likes the ball, find when he could, what could he see in the double team. You know, Buddy has to be like, all right, I'm available over here, I'm cutting this way, or I'm spacing here. So whenever you get doubled, look for me here. So all those things are big factors and come into play when it comes to down to playing with a guy, and also to for the stage of the playoffs.
Yeah. You mentioned Buddy Hield and kind of having to learn a role around Joel. You were one of the best shooters in the league when you played with Joel. The perception, I think, with him is you want to surround him by shooters. As someone that played with Joel and that learned to play with Joel, when you look at this current roster, like, what do you think the ideal player is around Embiid? And what advice would you give to his current teammates in terms of adapting their game to get the best version of Joel, which in extension is the best version of the roster?
Obviously, shooters make sense, but there's also cutters. You know, when you see the makeup of Denver and Jokic, they don't have just shooters. They have Aaron Gordon, who can catch a lob pass or duck in, because Joel's going to be in the post sometimes, and sometimes he can't get it across the court. They have MBJ, who can shoot. But you need guys that can shoot, but also move and be available, have a high IQ, either get to the free throw line when doubled or pull over to the three-point line or run baseline to baseline to get them an outlet. So you need guys that are smart enough to move and that are threats where the team is scared to double off them. But yes, the best advice that I can give them is to, you know, make it easy for themselves by, you know, being active offensively, talking it out, being in communication, and then giving them outlets. Make sure he can see you in double teams, because being doubled is not the easy thing. Whether you're 7 foot or not, it's hard to find guys or see through double teams, forearms, you know, forehands, and guys that are athletic. So the best advice to me is figure out the best way to get your spots when doubled, and push the pace when you can. And when he's not in, you'll find a way to keep up the slack and make sure that you don't have any losses or any during the benches where the big key is. So that's a big thing for them. Outside of that, you know, just be ready to shoot, but also be ready to find the space, the open space for him to make it easy for him to find you in double team.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about
ready to shoot for those shots to go in, DJ.
Yeah, Buddy has to be willing to shoot.
We got to make some of those shots count.
For sure. But you just got to, a lot of times you do have to make some, but a lot of times you have to be the threat, right? If people know you're willing to shoot it, as long as you're shooting it, they're like, all right, this guy's a shooter. They got to get to him. But if you're not looking at the basket, there's a lot of guys that are just not guys of respect, and you're not taking them, you know? And I'm not going to put any names out there, but there's guys that take more time, more just with DHO, and allows the defense to recover faster. You know, you miss 100% of your shots you don't take, so you got to take it.
I wanted to ask you, because you have won an NBA championship. You've been to the highest level of the sport. When you came to Philadelphia, there was already a lot of pressure to get out of the second round. I'm sure that's something you heard a lot about from the media, and they still have not done that. When you were on the Sixers, could you feel that pressure when you got to the second round? Could you feel kind of, you know, in those games 5, 6, 7s where, you know, we finally can get over the mountaintop? Just what was it like carrying that baggage with you when you were there, and could you feel it?
I know you could.
No, not the first year. The first year I was coming off COVID, so we just got fans later in the year. I think they're just happy to be in the building, you know?
Amen. Yeah.
And each year I got hurt. So, and there was always injuries to our team. So the first year we in Atlanta, we lost. I thought for sure we could have won. We're up 2-1 when I went down in Atlanta. I had the calf strain, and I thought for sure we could have beat them. I didn't feel the pressure as much then as it was the following year when we had the same group back, and we had James there. We're playing Miami. I tore my knee, obviously. But before that, they said it was tough because we started the first two games without Joel. He broke his face against Toronto the series prior. So there's always – Joel's always had, like, some type of injury we had to come back from, or we always had some type of injury. When you have that, I guess there's less pressure. But still, the city, the fans, the organization, they want to see wins. They want to see you guys make it out of the second round, especially against teams that you should have no business losing to. And I thought Atlanta for sure was a team that we should have beat. Miami was really good, so they're a tough one. So, you know, and without Joel the first two games and me going down with a torn knee, that's tough. That's hard to beat a group like that when you're missing another starter. But, yeah, I didn't feel it as much because of those injuries. But I'm sure if we were 100% healthy, it would be a lot different.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you didn't feel it, DG, because I would say from a fan perspective and even
I haven't been there long enough. I'm sure you guys have been there long. Like, are we got to get out of second round? Me, I just got there. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, we number one in the East. And we're winning. It's like, all right. And then when I got hurt, it's like we have a pretty good path to the Eastern Conference Finals, if not the finals, that year with Ben. And then, you know, maybe Ben felt it. He's been here for years. Maybe Ben felt the pressure. And that's when things went left for him or for us. But I didn't feel it as much that year. And I think, you know, the stories kept coming. And the following year, everybody was wide open. COVID had been way past. And they're like, you know, we got to get out of second round. I'm like, oh, okay, well. Yeah, we got to do.
You brought up two good points. One, COVID, fans not being there the year before and just wanting to be back in the building. And two, you were in that Atlanta series. And I do think a lot of this pressure for the team and the franchise got built after that Atlanta series. And after that kind of meltdown, if you want to say, then a lot of this pressure got put back on. And when we're looking at this season, I do think there's still a lot of pressure on Joel Embiid himself to get out of the second round. That's kind of the biggest blemish on his career so far. He's got an MVP, but doesn't have that, you know, the past the second round, the deep playoff run looking for. Do you still see that pressure on Embiid now that he's back, now that he's getting into rhythm?
I said it. It's tough, man, with the injuries. It takes a lot off you. I mean, obviously they want him to do well, but with him coming off injury, there's always going to be – that, you know, he wasn't 100%. It gives you a little bit of cushion, a little bit of an excuse. There is some, but because of every year he's always has an injury before the playoffs or during the playoffs, which makes it tough. So I still think he can do it. So with the East being this open, I think he can do it. But it's going to be interesting to see. Hold on a second. Shut up.
At first I was like, why does James have a dog in the studio?
Yeah, why do we have a dog in the studio? Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like he has some Embiid takes he wants to share. But I did have another Embiid question for you before we get to Maxie, because I'm interested for your perspective on him. Embiid, as a leader and as a teammate, I know there's a lot of different leadership styles. I'm curious, what type of leader is Embiid? Is he someone that leads by example? Is he someone that's on the team playing, you know, hanging out with everybody, going out on you know, taking people to dinner? Like, what was your experience of having Joel?
Yeah, I think as he's gotten older, he's gotten more team-oriented. Before, he just kind of stayed himself. He didn't really go out much. He would just, you know, play his video games, eat a steak, and you know, show up for games. But now that he's gotten older, he's been more into with the team, hanging out. I said, I don't know how he's been since the injury or since I've left, but I could see he's understanding that it's more important to do that. But yeah, normally he just kind of stays to himself and does his own thing. You know, as his little one, I don't know if he's working on another one, but he FaceTimes him all day. He will be with the guys on the table gambling a little bit. That's how he integrates himself. But other than that, he just kind of stays to himself.
Do you think it's important that he has taken that step to be more of maybe a you know, vocal leader or hang with the guys more? I mean, as the team leader, do you think that's required, or do you think you know, any style works?
Say that again. What was the last part?
No, I was just saying, do you think it's important that he's taken that step? Like, as the leader of the team, the best player on the team, do you think it's important to have someone that is, you know, not keeping to himself as much?
100%. I mean, that's why how Bron has gotten the best out of his teammates and how he's gotten that. He understands, like, you need that type of camaraderie. You need that type of locker room. You need to have the group off the court that tight-knit. And the more Joel does that and understands, I think he understands it a little bit more, but he probably has to do it even more, exert himself into a college-like style type of locker room, you know, where guys are hanging out more. That's the best you're gonna get to be able to get to know each other, to where you be comfortable going into battle with each other. You know each other on the floor better. So it's important. I think he understands that. I haven't been there in a little while, so I don't know what it's like, but I know you got guys like Tobias, you know, Kyle Lowry there, you know, obviously Nick, they keep the locker room together, and guys that are good with doing that. But, you know, for him being the leader, I think it's very important for you to be in that space and very much at the forefront of it, you know, of leading. You know, let's go do something. Let's get some dinner. Let's go do an escape room. Let's hang out, paintball or something like that. So you need that type of thing during the season with your teammates.
For sure. Elliot mentioned that he wanted to go to Maxi, and that's kind of where I'm at too, and wondering. So we saw Maxi this season without Joel Embiid. His numbers didn't really take a jump, right? They didn't take a dip, but they didn't take a jump like a lot of people kind of wanted them to as, you know, Maxi going into this year. Now that Joel's back, the numbers are starting to take a jump. Is there, and it's actually something that Elliot and our other co-host Jack Fritz have been debating about, is there any added pressure on Maxi this year to kind of further establish himself as someone who you could definitely look at to be number two on a title contending team, or is he still looking at progression?
No, Tyrese, there's no pressure, but he plays like that. You know, he plays very free. He's going to be himself. He's got the ball in his hands. He's the main guy with the ball outside of Joel. So there's no pressure on him, and I don't think he'll feel the pressure. He's going to hoop. But Joel coming back, obviously, it's a small sample size of what it is to compare the numbers. But when Joel come back, it just frees up this opening for everybody. More, you know, say he's able to come up pick and rolls easier. He's able to get more shots. He's able to get more looks, open looks, because of another guy like that. When there's not Joel on the floor, it's a little harder to get those shots because they can double you more. You know, they can throw different things at you. But the fact that said Joel's back, it opens up the, you know, the floor for him a lot more.
Okay, so how about this one, DG? Rank, where would you put Maxi as a Joel Embiid running mate compared to his previous running mates? A James Harden, a Jimmy Butler, a Ben Simmons. Like, where does Maxi fall under that? Because I think that will give Sixers fans a big indication of what they can expect from this duo moving forward.
I think he's up there with James. I think they're very complimentary. I thought just like him, Joel and James, I think were very complimentary because James is on the floor, pick and roll, very good passer, lead the league, you know, good with pocket passes and finding Joel. I think Tyrese is up there too, just, you know, obviously younger, a little more explosive getting to the rim. So I think, you know, James and Tyrese are probably in the same category. It's probably the best fit that he's had, you know, because obviously him and Ben was great. He's a good all-star, but I just don't think the style of play made it harder for Joel to have the space because Ben was a non-shooter and the fit wasn't that great. But Joel, I mean, Ben could push the pace. He was better fit for guys like myself and Tobias, you know, just run the wings and Seth. We can run the wings and shoot threes. But when it comes to Joel, you know, he needs more space and he needs another guy that can shoot or come up pick and rolls where they have to respect this three ball. So I think Tyrese and James are kind of in the same category. It's probably the best guys that he's had to fit with throughout his career so far.
Just a few more here. Appreciate your time. Again, this is Danny Green. Thank you so much for being on. I think sometimes Sixers fans wonder, why will this year be different? We've seen them have great regular seasons. We've seen Joel win MVP. One reason I think there could be different is they have Nick Nurse now. You played for Doc Rivers and you played for Nick Nurse. What are the differences you see in them as head coaches?
Just Nick is outside the box a little bit. You know, he's just he attacks differently than Doc. I think Doc is, for some people, think is a little more predictable. I don't know. So, like I said, honestly, it's I wouldn't say apples and oranges, but you know, I guess it's a preference, right? I think all coaches are preferred by different players, depending on what your style of play is, who has like minds of you. I think some people love playing for Doc, some people love playing for Nick, and I think the style of play is just a little different. I think Nick is like more of a carefree up and down, you know, three ball and kick swing, but with Joel is different for him. But I think Doc is more of an old school. That's why he was able to adapt to Joel probably easier, because he was a back to back. He coached KG. He coached a lot of those guys of the old days, whereas, you know, your typical stereotypical big is different for Nick. Nick's never really had that before. But so just two different styles, two different outlooks. So I just think Nick is just more, I think he's just more outside the box. You know, I think Doc will do the more safe thing. I think Nick will be like, all right, let's try something. He's the type of guy to try a triangle and two in the finals and not scared to do so.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. This is the last one from me. Just how big of an advantage, forget the Doc comparison, just Nick Nurse in a playoff series, how big of an advantage is he? Because a lot of times people say, well, it's just the players, you know, they ultimately decide things. But how big of a weapon can he be on the bench for the Sixers in a game six or a game seven, you know, against a Boston or Milwaukee or even Denver if they go to the finals?
I think he has, well, in the East for sure. I don't know if he has the advantage over Mike Malone. I think, but the fact that he can think outside, so he can think and attack differently. But when you're facing up against, you know, the minds of younger coaches, you know, an Orlando Magic coach or a Cleveland Cavaliers coach, yeah, I think he has the edge and experience. Now, him and Doc will be a good face-off in battle. Joe Mazzulla is only like his second or third year. So I think he has advantage there. I think I'm going to say it's a huge advantage, but I think the fact that he has, you know, the experience and he's been there before and has done it with different types of pieces and has seen it work gives him a little bit more of an edge against those younger coaches.
That's good. I know ESP wants to hear that Nick Nurse is a weapon for the Sixers on the sideline. It overturned that Doc Rivers was not. I got one thing, DG, before we let you go. Yeah. Settle a debate for us between the Clap Your Hands co-host and producer.
Okay.
Our guy, Kelly Oubre, set to become a free agent this offseason, right? What dollar amount do you think Kelly Oubre commands in the market? What do you think Kelly Oubre brings home?
Oh, man, it's tough, man. It's tough. Because
give me a number range.
The CBA is a difficult one this year, and it's like only certain guys are getting paid. Is only certain guys getting paid money and everybody else is kind of picking up the chips and getting minimums. I thought Kelly, before he even got there, averaging 20 points a game. And this year he started off so well. He's been up and down a little bit since then. But I think he's definitely at least a $15 million a year player. But in this market now and where the league is and how the CBA is, I couldn't see anybody paying. You know, like I said, there's not, unless you're one of the star players, they're not paying you more than, you know, 5 to 7, you know, that mid-level annual or whatever it is. So, unfortunately, I said the playoffs are going to have to help him. If he has a great showing in the playoffs, he could get to that $15 million mark. But unfortunately, I think he's probably going to be around the 6-7, you know, like that area. Yeah,
that's right. Right.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks. It's just crazy. But this is how the league is right now. I said I hope that he could get at least 12, you know, what Grant Williams got or something like that. But it's all timing, spacing, and it's all, I guess, place and I. Whenever you're free, the summer, you know, whatever summer you're free, what's available out there, and it's not a lot.
Last question that I want to, you know, you can tell everybody where they can find you. Just give us a prediction. Yeah. Give us a prediction. Yeah. Like,
yeah, where do Sixers go, DJ?
Where do they go? Where does their season end? Are we getting a parade?
I think they get to the second round for sure. I don't think there's a parade this year. There's too many variables of injuries, man, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I think they give some teams a run for their money. I think they can get out of the first round, the second round, give somebody a run for their money. I see Denver, Boston in the finals. Okay. If Boston doesn't win, there's going to be some changes coaching-wise probably. But, yeah, you can find me inside the green room, man. I've done some stuff with them. I've done stuff with ESPN. I'll probably be doing things in the playing games with them. Done some stuff with Yahoo. Done some stuff with Turner, with Betcast. So I'm doing a little bit of everything, man. I'm a freelance guy, but Inside the Green Room is where I'm consistently at. You can find me there with my co-host Harrison Sanford. But yeah, it's been a pleasure, awesome, fellas. I appreciate you guys.
Well, like I said, thank you so much for coming on. You were definitely a fan favorite. You were here. When you were here, it was awesome. Good chance to talk to you. And hey, if they make a finals run, maybe we'll have you back on. So thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys, man. Thank you. All right. Awesome.